Hello, everybody, and welcome to Reading from MinMax. MinMax is a place about games, friends, and getting better. My name is Ben Hansen. I'm joined by one Kelsey Lewin.
Published author, Kelsey Lewin.
The most modest person in the game industry, but she's got a tout her own horn, as the saying doesn't go today, because here's how this works. Each and every week, we let people at the $10 tier, the Backstage Pass tier, vote to choose which new show we create or continue for New Show Plus. We are here to please. We are here to constantly iterate on our content and make MinMax better and better, thanks to the Patreon supporters. And so we volley new shows every single week. And this week, people chose a show called Reading, focusing in this first episode on the book that Kelsey Lewin just finished about Animal Crossing. Kelsey, congratulations on writing a damn book.
Thank you. This has been really weird for me because I actually started writing this book a pretty darn long time ago. Like, the beginning of this book is like 2018 or 19 or something.
Weird.
It has been a very long time, much longer than I anticipated it to take. And you can probably relate to this, like when you are embarrassed by a certain aspect of how you handle the project, it's so difficult to be like, I don't know, to not be constantly apologizing for that part or feel self-conscious about it. Like,
No one else will notice.
To celebrate now that the book is here.
Yep.
And just take it as it is and everything. I think it's a better book for having taken so long. There's a bunch of stuff I rewrote. But it is weird. I'm no longer, you know, like, it's not like I finished writing this 6 weeks ago or whatever. It was
pretty
close to done well over a year ago.
No, but just say you were sweating to the last second when it finally shipped out the door. And now you can get it. Where can people get the Animal Crossing book?
You can get a signed copy on the Pink Gorilla Games website. You can get copies as well as digital copies on the Boss Fight Books website. I don't know if it's on, I assume it's on other retailers too, but those are, Pink Gorilla is my business and then Boss Fight Books is the publisher. So both of those are like the most direct ways to support.
Great. Most Starbucks stores have them at this point, I'm sure.
Oh, that'd be great.
Great. So here's how this is going to work. We're going to sit back and we're all going to take a chill pill and we're going to listen to Kelsey read her own book. What a hero, by the way, Kelsey. I would crawl out of my own skin. So the fact that you're comfortable with this, I love it. And here's the thing. If you're watching this,
a relative term.
Well, you know, it goes, no one's ever really comfortable in life. But here's how it works. If you're watching this and say, hey, I would like to support MinMax. Hey, I would like to support Kelsey. I'd like to read a book about the history of Animal Crossing written by a video game historian like Kelsey here. You can win a signed copy of this book. All you have to do is follow MinMax Show on Instagram. Follow MinMax Show on Instagram. There is a picture of Kelsey posted on MinMax's Instagram channel. You'll probably recognize which one. She'll be holding the book. You leave a comment and say a nice thing about Kelsey or Animal Crossing, and you follow MinMax on Instagram, we're going to randomly choose five winners, and they will all win a copy of Kelsey's book, signed by her. They'll be shipped out. And so we'll choose those by Friday of this week. So August 9th. So follow MinMax on Instagram and show some love, and we'll ship out a signed copy to five random winners. Kelsey, how did you go about choosing? Are we reading the beginning of the book? What are we going to be reading here?
No, so we're going to read a chapter called It's a Lot of Fun, I Swear. And what's fun about this chapter, aside from just being, I don't know, a chapter I like, is that that quote, that it's a lot of fun, I swear, that comes from the Game Informer review of the game.
No. Wow. Rest in peace.
It does, from Lisa Mason, I believe. Let me double check.
That's funny. So it's her. Okay. Do you have quotes from the review in there?
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. I love
it. Yes. Lisa Mason for Game Informer wrote that line in her review, gave it a 9.5.
Whoa. So you never see that line in a 9.5. If it's a 9.5, if you're like, you get the idea, you come crawling to me. But this is like, I really need to convince you that this is worth your while.
Yeah. So I wanted to, I picked this chapter as a little bit of piggybacking off of the Game Informer celebration stuff that we're doing right now, because it not only quotes Game Informer in the title, I talk about her review in the chapter as well. There's also one other like little cameo in here, that tour that you guys just posted of the like new old Game Informer office. There's an item that's in that video that's also mentioned in this chapter.
All right, so. Synergy. This is what we're talking about at MinMax here. Great. Okay, so how would you like to frame this? If the people are screaming questions, should I ever interrupt you? Or are you going to be like an angry librarian and throw your book against the wall? Should we wait until
you
the end of the chapter?
Me?
Well, that seems
this
rude.
This isn't like a crazy long chapter. This is, I don't know. I don't know how long it takes to read stuff out loud. I guess let's just start. And if you find a decent point to interrupt me, please do.
Great. Take it away. Welcome to reading from MinMax, everybody. We invented it. Enjoy.
All right. It's a lot of fun, I swear. At E3 2001, in a packed ballroom amidst the glitzy gold halls of the Los Angeles Biltmore Hotel, Shigeru Miyamoto lifted a Nintendo GameCube high above his head. Clapping and cheers erupted into outright screaming as the lights dimmed and the first game footage was shown, Super Smash Bros. Melee, during which one journalist clearly yelled, "What? Ice climbers?" in utter bewilderment. Game after game was met with oohs and ahs, wows and woes, until a strange game called Animal Forest popped on screen and was met with complete silence. The demo footage showed a female villager digging holes, chopping down a tree, and playing with a ball. That was it. 5 seconds later, it was over, replaced on the screen with Metroid Prime to another eruption of cheers. Donuts no Mori was confirmed for a Western release, and nobody really seemed to notice. The game was no stranger to being underestimated by journalists. When the Nintendo 64 version was shown off for the first time at Nintendo Space World 2000, it was shuffled in with technologically impressive games like Metroid Prime and Luigi's Mansion that thrilled the audience. The GameCube had just been unveiled on stage by a crew of leather-clad Japanese presenters and fog machines. Even though there were plenty of Nintendo 64 games present at the show, the big titles were sequels like Pokémon Stadium Kinjin, known here as Pokémon Stadium 2, and Mario Party 3. I don't know how do you, like, when people are reading audiobooks, how do they do footnotes? I have a shitload of footnotes in this.
I don't know. That's a good question. Yeah, you can just be like, footnote, I guess. I don't know. I don't know if they do it that way. I have no idea.
Yeah, I have no idea. I even listen to audiobooks. I've never heard anyone say footnotes, so I don't know. Maybe they just skip them.
You do actually, I was just listening to The Hobbit book on tape, and the way it works is they say footnote, but they say it as if they're singing Footloose. And so you have to say that, but then jump to it that way. It's just the way the rules work. I don't know.
That's a long joke. I'm glad I hung in there.
Oh, okay. I have questions already.
Okay.
Can you imagine the scenario? So there's footage of Animal Forest being revealed?
Yes. Yeah. So for this chapter, I found and watched a lot of old footage from these shows. So from E3 2001, from Space World 2000, what ice climbers thing is great. I think it's I have my sources in the back here. I'm pretty sure is it Planet GameCube or Planet Nintendo or something like that? It was like an online outlet that was very in the very early days, and they did they uploaded a long time ago the footage of this. So wherever they were sitting, they happened to be sitting next to someone who was very loudly commenting about stuff, which is great. Really good, like, contextual color, you know?
Yep. Yep.
Like,
time and
I really love that because I think that, you know, hindsight is 2020 with all this stuff. Like, of course, Animal Crossing, it's a big game now. So, of course, people were excited then. But, like, you can watch the footage and see that absolutely no one cared.
Yep. I think it makes sense.
It's kind of interesting.
I'm imagining those reactions to, like, in a Nintendo Direct or something. This is not the same, but it's like the same as maybe it's not the same, but it's exactly the same as. Here's the segment on the new Denpa Men, where I think people are like, what is this weird?
So we were hype.
We were hype because we've learned from the likes of Animal Crossing, never doubt a weird looking game in a Nintendo Direct. But I think it's probably just a take of, what is this weird Japanese crap? Somebody shoveling in a forest? Sure. But like, no one's going to be like, I see a tree. Like, there's nothing exciting to react to until you understand the system.
She's got a ball.
right. There's nothing there. All right. Sorry. I'm sorry for interrupting the reading.
No, of course. We should interrupt. Okay, so we ended with it flying relatively under the radar. That's not to say the game was completely ignored. It got some light coverage, mostly with a, written with a tone I can only describe as polite confusion. Even a couple of American magazines offered a screenshot and a short blurb about the mysterious Japanese game we'd probably never see, but there was no big splash. In the UK, there was a bit more excitement for the title. Nintendo Official Magazine UK gave Animal Crossing a full two-page spread in their Space World 2000 coverage, calling it a classic in the making and one of Nintendo's most important games. However, they also incorrectly called it an exciting Shigeru Miyamoto project, an entirely false attribution they probably inferred from his presentation, which may have inflated their faith in the game. If journalists thought Nintendo's most famous and accomplished developer was heading this project, it would make sense for them to cover it extensively. Animal Crossing's early marketing mostly struggled to excite the press. Honestly, nobody's fault. What type of game is Animal Crossing, anyways? The reality is, you have to write a genre for the retail packaging labeling, Katsuya Iguchi recalled in an interview for Nintendo Online Monthly. I'm going to be naming some people in this that if you had read the previous chapters, I do explain who they are.
Oh, good.
But because we're jumping in the middle, Katsuya Iguchi is one of the two creators of the game. They had to write a genre for the retail labeling. We hadn't thought about that at all. It was like, what should we write? I have no idea. He and his team eventually settled on the genre communication, the briefest possible explanation of Animal Crossing, which is not exactly an established genre. In the West, Animal Crossing games are sometimes labeled simulation games, often getting grouped in with games like Natsume's Harvest Moon by many journalists and fans. But even as far back as May of 2000, before the game was even announced, communication was being teased as the next genre for Nintendo. When the game was unveiled that August, the official press material was bafflingly bland. Captions under screenshots were very matter-of-fact. You can pick some fruit, and you can fish in the sparkling river. And who could forget the riveting PR line, you need to buy a house from a tanuki at the beginning of the game.
Need to.
They these come from, I think it was John Ricciardi posted some photos of his press materials from Japan that year, and it was translated into English roughly, and so those were the quotes.
That's
on
amazing.
The thing, it's very funny.
Did you reach out to him about the book?
Oh yeah. He's okay. Credited in here. All of this is sourced, I promise.
No doubt. How many people did you reach out to total? Do you think? How many people did you talk to or interview?
Tons. So it probably won't come as any surprise to people that. Currently employed Nintendo employees were not allowed to talk to me. I got as far as getting in front of them, like standing in front of Hisashi Nogami, Ayakyo Goku, Bill Trinan, and asking them to their faces if they would do this, and they just couldn't. So Bill Trinan especially, like, did try. He sent an email to his boss and tried, but, you know, got the, nope, you can't. Can't do any of that. So
is this from years ago? Like, I saw Metal Jesus Rocks video where you were talking about, like, meeting them for the first time. Okay, is that?
So yeah, this is years
it's
ago.
That
this
old.
Was
okay.
E3, like 2019 or something like
wow.
that.
Wow. Okay.
So I tried with a lot of the current employees, could not, you know, wasn't allowed to talk to them. Luckily, a lot of them have given a ton of great interviews, so I was still able to pull from a lot of those. I did also get to interview Leslie Swan, who was the localization director at the, like, the Treehouse director at the time.
Is she the voice of Peach?
She is also the voice of Peach.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. And she, you know, she goes back to just very early days of Nintendo of America. So
that's awesome.
She was like an English teacher before all of this.
Yeah.
So she was amazing. Got to interview her. And the fun thing about being not allowed to interview the, like, most important people to the making of this game is that I had to get really creative. And I think I have some weird interviews that I would not have thought to do if I had just had full access. So, like, in here, I interviewed the guy who made, there was, like, a little Animal Crossing website called The Crossing Guardian that looked like an old newspaper. And he just worked for, like, a web development agency that made, you know, was contracted by Nintendo and made that website. I interviewed, I think you interviewed the logo designer too, right? That's on the MinMex channel. Yeah. I interviewed like just a ton of people who were, you know, big shots in like the community, you know, moderators for different Animal Crossing sites and stuff like that. A lot of really interesting interviews that don't have a lot to do with the people who, you know, put together the game in the first place. But again, there were a ton of old interviews to pull from, so I still feel pretty good about, you know, getting, I had a lot of interviews translated as well, because there were a ton of them in Japan, especially. I brought a couple of props. I would say, you guys are familiar with Famitsu, right? The bi-weekly magazine in Japan.
Yes, Mrs. Lewin.
Yeah. I read every Famitsu from like 2001 to 2004 looking for Animal Crossing content.
Awesome.
So my shelf, I didn't bring the whole thing over, but I have like two whole rows of Famitsu magazines and these wherever the Animal Crossing content is in it. So...
Just, fantastic. Are you using like Google Lens on there then? Like, what do you?
That's how I started with all of them, and then if there something like looked promising or interesting, I passed it over to a real,
that's
a
awesome.
Real translator. So, I don't want to lose that, even though I guess I don't really need all these bookmarks in here anymore.
You want a dorky fun story from behind the scenes of MinMax? That's boring compared
absolutely.
To the behind the scenes of Animal Crossing. I was trying to come up with a name for this show, and I was like, oh, can we come up with some pun for reading rainbow, like reading Kelsey bow, and then I'll ask Kelsey to put a bow in her hair. And then I said that you do actually have a bow in your hair while doing a reading session. I mean, that's as magical as you can get.
Like a 50% chance I'm wearing a bow every day.
Perfect.
So that's a pretty easy one.
Captain Cobblepot asks, can you give a background on why you chose Animal Crossing? What's your connection there?
Yeah, I actually go into that in the book, too. But it's a really, really important game to me. I was between this and Pokemon Red and Blue, and I decided that I would never be satisfied with the amount that I read and interviewed and learned about Pokemon Red and Blue. There's just simply the book would be 800 pages long. It would be longer than Ulysses. It would just be the... Like, yep. I did not think that I would ever be satisfied writing that. Whereas Animal Crossing, you know, I chose this before New Horizons was a thing. So it ended up being, I think, a much bigger deal of a game than it was at the time. Obviously, it was plenty successful by then. But yeah, just a game that has always been very important to me. I was a moderator for an Animal Crossing forum for several years when I was like a preteen teenager. I don't know, big part of my life.
Yeah, of course. Awesome.
Okay, we're talking about John Ricciardi's lovely PR piece here that had some fun lines like you need to buy a house from a tanuki at the beginning of the game. They highlighted the real-time clock feature and the ability to visit other villages, but there wasn't really any indication that any of this would be fun. With magazines only giving it a trickle of coverage, the burden of buzz generating was on Nintendo. In Japan, they ran a commercial for Dōutsu no Mori that featured a little girl and her family. She shyly walks into the kitchen and says, I want to get a room of my own. A room of your own, the dad repeats in disbelief. Isn't it a bit too early for you to have your own room, chides the mom. Let's create a room of your own in Dōutsu no Mori, booms a narrator's voice over footage from the game. Furnish your rooms, dress yourself up, write a letter, even work a side job. The little girl looks pleased playing the game, and her dad appears behind her, wide-eyed. May daddy live there too, he asks? Obviously, all this is in Japanese, but, you know.
It sounds great in Japanese, yeah.
Yeah. It's a short but sweet commercial. In Japan, houses tend to be quite compact without space for the children to have their own room, so showing off that a game would give you a space of your own, and might pique your parents' interest too, was a smart call. Surprisingly, one of the game's most innovative and exciting features was missing from its marketing thus far. Early Dōutsu no Mori press had zero mention of the Famicom/NES emulator, those NES furniture items that would allow you to play real NES games, a feature that would ultimately drive a lot of people to give the game a shot. It's possible it had simply not been implemented yet at Spaceworld 2000. Nintendo reported that the game was only 70% complete during the show, so perhaps it could have been a tail-end edition. But even so, I find this absence from Nintendo's own ads and commercials strange. When the game was finally released on April 14th, 2001 in Japan, this is the Nintendo 64 version.
Right.
2 months after initially projected, the media began warming up to it. Famitsu called it the quiet boom that will soon become a big boom. By June, the game had gained an... Sounds sure. better in Japanese, I
yeah,
promise.
I hope so, I hope so. That's great. It sums it up.
Yeah. By June, the game had gained enough interest that they ran a multi-page feature on it, explaining the mechanics and even publishing photos of the female design's death. It certainly wasn't Nintendo's best-selling game, but as word spread, Animal Crossing sales grew, with Famitsu reporting that the most recent retail shipments of the game were selling out. Back in the glitzy world of E3 2001, Nintendo was not the only company keeping game journalists busy. Microsoft revealed all the final details on the soon-to-be-released Xbox, their first foray into the console market. Sony announced lots of new titles and features for the PlayStation 2, now over a year old. And Sega, accepting defeat and bowing out of the console market, was signing publishing deals left and right, scattering their many franchises between the three console manufacturers. The flurry left little room for journalists to think about the five-second clip of Animal Crossing. A few months after E3...
Excuse me.
Yeah.
You mentioned photos of the female development staff?
Yeah, again, with this being in the middle of the book, there's stuff that...
Oh, sure.
...discussed earlier. Animal Crossing is a really unique game in that nearly every female designer that was employed at Nintendo worked on this game at the time. And that wasn't a lot of people yet, obviously. Believe it or not, game industry has not historically always been the most female-friendly place, and we're talking, late 90s, early 2000s when this is all starting, so still kind of early on in them getting that together, but this game had a surprisingly large number of female design staff, and they worked on things like, everything from, the UI to actual items within the game and stuff like that, so...
Is it... What do you think the angle was of just like, was it a feature of in the magazine of like, look at all these women making a game?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And Tezuka, I can't control F physical book. So I can't find the exact quote, but he did in an interview tell a journalist basically we thought that if we are targeting more than just men for a game like this, we need the input of more than just men, so we put a bunch of women on the staff for this.
God.
So,
okay.
Pretty forward thinking for the time, actually.
Yeah. I know you don't like getting into crazy hypotheticals, but do you think that's a pretty one-to-one? Do you think that if it was an all-male team making Animal Crossing, that the audience would reflect that?
Great question. Okay. I would say that, for the original Animal Crossing, for this original Nintendo 64 / GameCube one, it didn't lean nearly as I think it's thought of as a quote unquote girl game now, even though obviously still millions and millions of men play it too. But I don't think that was the case at all back then. I think it was really, I think it might have even still been more men,
I'm sure,
than women at the time. I mean, you're talking about who owns a GameCube, who owns a game console in general, and who's reading the magazines and seeing what weird new thing Nintendo is putting out. So I think it became more of a eventually it caught on as a game that you could recommend to the women in your life or whatever. But I don't. That was their intention, but I don't think it just came out the gate only women are buying this,
Right, right. Yeah, I remember I first learned about Animal Crossing. It was my friend's older sister had it, and I remember being so confused. Wait, what do you mean this game just takes its own memory card? And it's like an Animal Crossing sticker on a memory card, and that's all you can fit on there? I think I know memory cards from the PS1 pretty well. It's this does not compute. But it ties into Bob Buell here. He says... for Kelsey, let me know if you have any questions for me, Bob. But he says, for Kelsey, do you know the backstory of how this game came with its own memory card?
Yeah, kind of. So it on the Nintendo 64, this was an enormous game. On the GameCube, you may have even heard the the cool thing that the game is so small that you can take the disc out of the GameCube and it'll keep running because it can run on the GameCube's RAM. Yeah.
Weird.
Try it out sometime. It's cool. But for the Nintendo 64, this was a massive game that they really, really had to cram to fit on their... They had a larger cartridge size memory-wise, but because this cartridge has a real-time clock in it, that's an expensive component. So in order to keep this game from being like a $90 N64 cartridge or whatever, they basically had to be like, okay, if we need to keep the real-time clock, we need to have a smaller sized cartridge here. And that sort of, my understanding is that sort of just meant that it also needed the memory card because you needed, I mean, this game started as a 64 disk drive game. It started life believing it was going to be a 64 disk drive game. That has very easily rewritable memory. I'm not a tech person, but like you can very easily write and rewrite to those hard disks. Can't do that as easily with a cartridge. It's why like sports games all need memory cards and stuff too. It's just like if you're making a lot of changes to the game, it's going to need like an external way of storing that unless you just have a massive, massive cartridge. So I think it's just a holdover from that.
Huh.
And the way they programmed it to be like reading certain things off of a memory card, that's my best guess. Because yeah, I guess the GameCube game, yeah, I mean, in theory, yeah, it could have just fit on any memory card, right? But I guess because this is a game that you, it's completely useless without a memory card, you know? Like, if you want to restart Wind Waker every single time you boot it up, like, you can. You haven't really ruined anything, but you can't, like, start a new town every single day. That's a totally different thing. So, I don't know.
Okay.
Between those two things, I think it's probably, you know, it's just what made sense.
Everyone's yeah,
it's a 59-block memory card, which is 4 megabytes, and that's like a fourth of the standard 251-block memory card for the GameCube.
Gotcha.
So
there we go.
A few months after E3, Nintendo showed off Dobutsu no Mori Plus at Space World 2001. This was the updated port of the Nintendo 64 game for the GameCube. You know what? I'm going to go grab a prop real quick because this is very confusing without either reading the earlier chapters or a visual.
Sure. I get it. Let's see. So I bought Animal Crossing on the GameCube. Loved it. I remember I thought I was pretty cheeky as a 14-year-old lad to name my town Hell. So it said, hello, welcome to Hell, was the strategy. Oh, you're supposed to be hearing this, Kelsey. Good Lord.
Thanks.
And then,
okay.
Oh, and then I remember, real quick, and then I remember my town song was Crazy Train. Ozzy Osbourne's Crazy Train because I was a pretty edgy kid. Yeah.
That's a... Half this book is about how much of an edgelord I was when I played Animal Crossing.
Oh,
so,
good.
Yeah. Okay. So, first Animal Crossing, Nintendo 64, only in Japan.
Awesome.
Dobutsu no Mori, my copy signed by Hisashi Nogami. He drew Bob on it. It's very sweet.
Did you ask for Bob?
No. No, he just drew it. He says it's his favorite character. It's also the first character created for this game.
That's awesome.
So, Nintendo 64 version. Dobutsu no Mori. Dobutsu no Mori Plus. Animal. Animal Crossing.
Yeah.
This is...
The same as Plus.
No.
Oh.
Almost. Plus. Plus. Plus with some more stuff and in English.
And that the name that you're saying in Japanese, that translates to Animal Forest?
Yes.
Okay.
Dobutsu no Mori E Plus. So this is
what
this game translated back into Japanese with a couple of extra features.
Weird. What is that?
And this is has a couple of extra features from this.
Right. What is the icon they're showing off? Like it looks like it includes this in the blue. What is that? I can't see.
That's
it.
The e-reader.
Oh, okay, of course.
The Game Boy Advance e-reader, because this was like the prime era of like they're trying to show how the Game Boy Advance and the GameCube work together.
Right,
It was basically
right.
like this game and like Four Swords and some of those. They're just trying to be like, look, you can smash your two things together. You can buy this $20 cord and this $100 game system and your $200 GameCube and your yeah.
It was a
Nintendo.
good time. It was a fun time. And it was nice to have that e-reader, and it was just like a legendary weird thing of like, what do you mean they made more levels for Mario 3? And it's only through the e-reader? Like, there's just good, funky stuff released for
Yeah,
that.
super, super weird. I talk about the eater a pretty good amount in this book. So, okay. A few months after E3, Nintendo showed off. I'm going to use these props. Dobotsu no Mori Plus at Space World 2001. This was the updated port of the Nintendo 64 game for GameCube with several new features added. Essentially, the same game they planned to sell in the West. This time, the game received more Western coverage, but again, for the wrong reasons. Perhaps because Miyamoto gave the presentation, many outlets incorrectly reported it to be his project, just as Nintendo Official Magazine UK had the year before. Exclusive new shots of Shigsy's Harvest Moon Killer, read the splash text for NGC Magazine's coverage of the game.
Yes.
Shigsy is the. My footnote here is just a truly terrible nickname for Shigeru Miyamoto.
I think it's going to catch on in the year 2024.
No. Dobotsu no Mori Plus released around 9 months before Animal Crossing had its North American debut, and less than a year after the release of the Nintendo 64 version. Commercials and magazines focused on its new features, while merchandising ramped up with plushies, figurines, and other goods. It was even more popular than before. By now, it was E3 2002. The GameCube had already been out for half a year, and Nintendo was focused on showing upcoming games. Finally, it was time to give a share of the spotlight to Animal Crossing. Once again, inside the Biltmore Hotel. Do you ever go to the Biltmore Hotel, by the way?
I don't think so.
This was probably before. I literally like have been inside of there, but they don't do press conferences there anymore, obviously, or hadn't for a long time at that point.
Ooh, this is
But
where Nintendo used to do their press
yeah,
conferences?
and it's just like a super fancy, like literally just glittery gold, ostentatious
Whoa.
grossness everywhere. But it's just like a random ballroom that they would give their presentations in.
Yeah, I don't think so. I was in the basement.
Oh, it's a Frank Lloyd Wright building. I didn't know
Oh,
that. Okay.
wow. I
It
was in
says
the. Nice.
pixelated
Yeah, I was in the basement of the 2011 press conference, but I don't know if it was in this fancy thing. I forget. But I was running video tech and streaming that and all the stuff when they announced the Wii U, which is very exciting.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
Where did I go? By now it was E3 2002. The GameCube had already been out for half a year. Nintendo was focused on showing upcoming games. Finally, it was time to give a share of the spotlight to Animal Crossing. Once again inside the Biltmore Hotel, the newly promoted Satoru Iwata took the stage as president of Nintendo to introduce the title as The True Magic of Nintendo Connectivity. He put on a video. A boy wearing a puka shell necklace, proof you were cool in the early 2000s, explained that the game was awesome because you can do all sorts of things that your parents won't let you do. Getting a job, owning a house, and planting trees were among the totally radical activities that the gel-spiked hair kid told the audience they'd be able to do in Animal Crossing.
Really?
He also explained that the game ran in real time and that you could have up to four people in your village. At this point, the commercial becomes a skit. His little sister shows up to play the game and he rolls his eyes. But wait, his super cool friends, one of them is wearing a backwards hat, distracted her with a Game Boy Advance connector cable, showing off that you can design clothing patterns on the Game Boy Advance while someone else is playing the game on the GameCube. Then the audience saw that there would be playable NES games in the game because mom got so distracted by Donkey Kong that she forgot to cook dinner. By the end, the skit had explained a lot of the game's features while also eliciting some nervous laughter from the audience. American journalists still didn't understand Animal Crossing. The game doesn't sound like it should be any fun, wrote Lisa Mason for Game Informer
Woo,
magazine.
Lisa.
At E3, I grilled the poor Nintendo lackey. So you live? You work? You just wander around and go to fishing tournaments? By the time Mason's review of the game was published months later, she'd changed her tune, pleading with the reader to give it a shot. It's a lot of fun, I swear, she wrote. Shockingly way more fun than it sounds. She gave it a 9.5 out of 10.
That's huge.
Review after review had the same theme. We can't explain why it's good. Please just try it anyway. While it may have found its footing in Japan, when Animal Crossing finally made its way to the States, Nintendo of America's marketing team was stumped as to how to sell it. I do have a footnote in here that I want to point out, which is the Japanese reviewers did use some of the same phrases. One Famitsu Impressions columnist began by saying, "I don't think I'm the only one who can't convey why Animal Crossing is fun to other people."
That's your job. I'm sorry, everybody. You just have to buckle up and do it.
I'm about to get into that with Nintendo's marketing, which is extra fun. Nintendo of America's marketing was stumped as to how to sell it. This whole communication concept was brand new. There hadn't really been any mainstream Nintendo games so devoid of action. So they tried a different approach. First, Nintendo of America got the game into people's hands well before its release. Traditionally, Nintendo was, and still is, quite conservative in allowing the press early access to forthcoming games. The bright blue tester Nintendo GameCube consoles that magazines and other outlets used to play pre-release games were often outfitted with a heavy lockbox.
Yeah.
Rather than simply mailing a pre-release copy of their games to the media, as other publishers did, a Team Nintendo member came and physically locked the games inside the GameCube so that no pre-release games could make it out into the wild. One of these shows up in the Game Informer tour.
Yeah.
You guys hold up a blue locked GameCube. That is...
It was
that's what they would do. They would lock the GameCube games inside the GameCube so you can't get it out.
I did not take it, to be clear. That was one of those things like, that would be just a cool thing to have on the shelf as a relic of Nintendo history. A padlocked GameCube, but it's not in my house, I swear. GameStop.
Okay, yeah. So normally that's what they did, right? Instead, Nintendo mailed a fully pressed, retail-ready copy of Animal Crossing to outlets a month before release. Animal Crossing is a unique title that has to be explained firsthand to be truly understood and appreciated, said Nintendo of America Vice President of Sales and Marketing Peter McDougall. That's marketing speak for. We have no idea how to sell this using words, so let's make people try it instead. But Nintendo didn't just give the press a month early crack at the game. They ran an online contest for consumers to receive an early copy as well, called the Animal Crossing Pioneer Program. The contest tasked Nintendo fans to grab a buddy and each answer a written prompt of 50 words or less. What makes you the most worthy pioneer? 250 lucky people received a copy of the game 1 month before its release date and were granted access to a private forum site to chat about their experiences and ask questions.
Wow.
The official wording said that winners would work closely with Nintendo to complete game objectives, provide feedback, participate in online chats, and post comments on a Pioneer-only website. This helped create a big buzz about the game on the internet, said Joshua Sloan, one of the contest winners. See, I found contest winners from this weird contest rather than, you know, talking to Katsuya Gucci or whatever. So I think it made it more interesting.
I agree. Yep.
He and a friend decided that they could make the most out of the low word count by writing haikus. And they were right. They received a copy of the game with the disc marked for promotional use only about a month before its nationwide launch. You can actually see, I don't have one, unfortunately. It's one of my few, like, Animal Crossing grails, I guess. It's the exact same game, but on this disc, there's, like, just a little square here that says for promotional use only. That's the copy that was sent out to the press and to winners of this Pioneer program. Nothing different about it. It's just an early pressing.
Nice. And you were looking through the Game Informer archives years ago to see if they had it?
I did, yeah.
And
I believe they did.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I think it had the note with it, too, that was like, welcome, pioneers. But the photo I took that I used for reference, I got from Chris Kohler.
Okay.
He has a copy of that has, like, the full, you know, like, welcome letter and all of that.
This is it's kind of reminding me of... I remember you were obsessed with it, but Nintendo's marketing of Earthbound back in the day, and also how they just completely struggled with that idea. And, you know, at Game Informer, they had the press releases, right? And how did they describe it again? Do you remember any of those details?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So I definitely go into this in the book and kind of make fun of them because it's weird. So a lot of the reviews actually, like, especially like non-video game outlet reviews, things like newspapers and stuff like that. They say really weird stuff. They say stuff like, you can choose your job or something, like just things that are not in the game at all, like cooking and stuff like, yeah, just mechanics that don't exist in the game at all. And I was wondering, I was like, why do so many of these outlets get it wrong? I traced it back to the press release. The press release just has like really confusing, inaccurate information in it that like came straight from Nintendo. So unless you were actually spending a lot of time playing the game and being like, hey, I don't actually see these things in here. You might just like print what was in the press release and be like, yeah, you know, Nintendo says you can cook and get a job and stuff.
Come on, sheeple. Jesus.
Yeah.
That's embarrassing. Yeah. So what, so everybody thought it was Miyamoto's project. I'm sorry, Shigsy's project. How involved was he? Are there any interviews out there where it talks about him swinging by the office and pointing a direction or two?
Basically not at all. Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously he's the big dog at Nintendo, so I'm sure he like made comments at some point or another, but this was Katsuya Gucci and Hisashi Nogami as the directors, and then Tezuka was the producer, and so he was kind of the like Miyamoto of that role, I guess.
You know,
he
was the one
didn't give it like a crazy amount of direction, but was more of the sort of, you know, overarching, making sure this is going in the right direction, knowing how to talk to the press about it, that sort of thing. So really no Miyamoto at all. He even says some really weird stuff about it several times throughout the game's marketing that confuses people. Basically he implies there's going to be a Game Boy Advance game, which could have been a translation error or could have been, unfortunately it's a magazine. So, you know, we never know what he like said in Japanese. We just know what they thought he said. So there's like, he's like implying that there's going to be like a Game Boy Advance game and that it's going to use the like, there's a Game Boy to like cell phone connector in Japan that can let, you know, that does certain things online. And he's just implying all of this weird stuff that, again, could be a translation error, might not have been Miyamoto's fault. But as far as I can tell, he only sort of knew what was going on with this project.
Weird.
Yeah.
That's awesome. The creators, the two names, what had they worked on before this?
Yeah, so Katsuya Gucci got started pretty early on. His first like big game that he, you know, played a really big role in was Star Fox. He was I believe the director of Star Fox, the original. So he started kind of around there. I know he did some Mario stuff before that, but it wasn't like in a director role or anything. And then Hisashi Nogami started, he was actually the artist on Yoshi's Island. So he did that really cool hand-drawn art style. He was actually the shorthand version of this is he was like an intern hire. Like they had a program called the Nintendo Game Seminar, Nintendo Dentsu Game Seminar. And it was kind of like a cross between an internship and like a college class. And they would take these college students and you'd apply. And it was obviously hyper-competitive and everything. And, you know, a small class of people would actually like work inside Nintendo, just kind of on, you know, learning the processes inside Nintendo and working on some smaller game projects. This is actually how the Famicom game Joy-Mech Fight came out. That was one of the students at the Dentsu Game Seminar.
Joy-Mech Fight?
Joy-Mech Fight, yes. This is a Jared Petty favorite game.
He just thinks it's really good.
It didn't come out in the States, but.
Oh, okay. Yeah, screenshot looks bizarre. I like the character. It's kind of like a Rayman floating style guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Good.
So Nogami came out of that. He was going to, I think, Osaka University of the Arts and, you know, went through this seminar program, got hired, and pretty quickly was working on, you know, very big franchises. I believe Mario Kart and, Yoshi's Island obviously was the big one. The two of them had worked together on Yoshi's Story, the Nintendo 64 game, right before this. And then they had also done a little bit of work on those weird 64DD Mario Artist series games.
Yeah, yeah.
They both worked on Talent Studio together, which is the one, the really weird one where you're like, you know, putting your face on characters and they're like acting out weird skits and stuff like that. So
Right. Cool. All right. So creative batch flown into this thing.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So we're talking to Joshua Sloan, who got one of these early press copies of the game, marked for promotional use only. Sloan was an avid member of several online Nintendo communities, and he was vaguely aware of Animal Crossing. He had seen the tiny blurbs mentioned in US magazines as far back as its Japanese debut on the Nintendo 64, but he really wasn't paying attention to this offbeat title. It wasn't like any of the other games he played, so he wasn't particularly excited about it. The Pioneer contest really turned this around, Sloane told me. It wasn't very modest, but I kind of felt like we nailed our entry, so I quickly started thinking of it more like, what's up with this weird game I'll be getting early, and finding it to be pretty intriguing. He sent me a link to a post from his old LiveJournal account, which simply reads, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, followed by a copy-pasted congratulatory message from Nintendo. The private online portal was relatively active. Pioneer contest winners and game journalists alike shared their thoughts on the game, what cool things were happening around their towns, and traded items through the game's password system. It was indicated that this early player feedback could be used to improve the game, Sloane told me. Some people made sure to suggest lists of changes, whereas others of us realized that they really couldn't mean that very seriously for a game releasing in only a month. With weeks of lead time, the contest winners successfully generated pre-release excitement through the internet. Sloane was a frequent poster to several video game online forums, and he shared his experiences there as well as within the portal. Just the novelty of his having a game before it was released was enough to perk up some ears. Nintendo ran another online promotion through their website, too, called the Deck Out Your Room Sweepstakes. It was a chance for contestants to win a TV, a stereo, a GameCube, a Game Boy Advance, a couple of controllers, and a pile of games. While I have no idea how effective it was, my favorite of Nintendo's marketing efforts was undoubtedly their website's faux Animal Crossing newspaper, The Crossing Guardian. The site was designed to look like a real paper, featuring several different sections of content updated regularly and complete with fashion spotlights, features written by the animal villagers themselves, and even advertisements. Not real advertisements, but advertisements for the virtual businesses within the game itself. Wendell's quality wallpaper, all currency accepted. Fish preferred, read one banner ad, referencing the hungry walrus who occasionally wanders into town. Like every website in the early 2000s, it also had downloadable wallpapers and other various digital goods, but additionally served as a hub for distributing unique in-game item via codes, like Mario-themed furniture. For those of us who treated Animal Crossing like an immersive roleplay, having a realistic newspaper added yet another layer to the game's depth. Jamal Kutub, actually, I've never said his name out loud, I'm not sure how to say it. I think it's Kutub. Was an artist at Second Story Interactive Studios, where they got a contract from Nintendo to create a website for Animal Crossing. The newspaper layout was his team's idea. We pitched the idea to Nintendo as a way to add a lot of interactive experiences and a fun way to present new info in the future, he told me. I think our thought was perhaps maybe it updates every month or so with different stories and interactive experiences. The Crossing Guardian technically ran for 516 issues, though its content was recycled several times.
Sure.
You would think the updates would include news on the newer games in the series, but it never did. It simply jumbled up whatever pre-written content it always had from 2002 and slapped on a new date and issue number, all the way up until the site was laid to rest in 2012.
Whoa.
Yeah. Still, to pick up a digital copy of the town newspaper, as I often did when I was younger, was another fun way to immerse myself in the world of Animal Crossing. This is taking longer to read than I thought. I thought this was a really short chapter, but... Once you start saying it out loud.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, how much you got left? Do you want to wrap it up here? Do you want to keep rolling?
We should probably just take some questions and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to see if there's a... I want to read the last paragraph just because I think it's kind of interesting.
Sure.
Animal Crossing sold better in the U.S. than anyone expected, reaching over 1.5 million sales in the U.S. alone. Its sales of over 3 million units worldwide placed it comfortably in the top 10 best-selling GameCube games of all time. But it never seemed like a hit. It didn't make the cover of a single U.S. magazine, yet its sales rivaled every Legend of Zelda game on the system, every Metroid game, and it even beat out all four Mario Party titles. Subsequent games in the series would continue this trend, outselling all three in their respective matchups on the DS, Wii, 3DS, and Switch, but it wasn't until years later into this console-after-console thrashing that game journalists would give it more serious attention. Honestly, who can blame them? Animal Crossing is weird. And then there's a footnote that's, Animal Crossing City Folk went 5-2 against the sales of the three franchises in the Wii era, or 5-3 if you count Link's Crossbow Training as a Zelda game.
Of
so
course,
didn't
it.
Outsell every single one of those games, but it outsold, like, as a whole, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I love that. Dillinger Nick says, what's the most interesting tidbit you learned from interviewing everybody?
Oh, gosh.
You had to boil it down to one tidbit.
One to one?
Mm-hmm.
That's, no, I cannot.
Okay. Give me your top five.
I'll try to pick one though. I mean, I learned a lot from Leslie Swann was probably the best interview in this just because she ran the Treehouse for so long, gave so many just interesting, colorful anecdotes about what that experience was like. I mean, just she was so good at just using phrases like, you know, oh, I can still, you know, picture them with their like hoodie up, hunched over a desk writing, you know, like just really colorful illustrative stuff. It was awesome. Oh, I'm moving my camera. But she did tell me a really fun tidbit just about how things get lost in translation between Japan and the U.S. And this one, in this case, isn't about Animal Crossing. It's about Pikmin. But that, you know how Pikmin have those little, like, they're milk caps. But not we don't know what milk caps are. That's not, like, a thing here.
Oh.
But in the games, those little,
the
like,
ones
discs,
and fives and everything?
Yeah,
okay.
Those are milk caps. And that's a thing that's, like, super popular and widely collected in Japan by kids.
Wow.
That's like just like a normal pastime that, you know, basically neither side could understand how the other side didn't get it. Leslie was like, you know, what the heck are these things? I was like, what do you mean? What are they? Milk caps. She's like, what do milk caps have to do with anything? It's like asking, you know, like, what does baseball have to do with anything? It's like, what do you mean? That's like the national pastime. Like, what are you talking about? So just stuff like that, that the, you know, between the two sides that they had to reconcile on. There was another little one, this came from someone else, but about just a, like a, when they were trying to create a barbecue item in the game, when they started making some like US specific sets, and the folks in Japan just did not understand what like US barbecues were like. So they put, I forget what it was, but they put like fish or something on the skewers, like just something that doesn't happen here. And they're like, no, it's like hot dogs, hamburgers, you know? And they're like, what are you talking about? Fish skewer.
Perfect. So. Taco asks, how has your perspective changed on the series or just particular Animal Crossing games after writing this book?
It has given me the utmost appreciation for the weirdness, uniqueness of the original game and of what is basically impossible to do going forward. And I think it just has to do with our expectations as people who play games now. I mean, just, you know how people often say like, oh, you know, back in my day, I had three games and I would spend all weekend trying to get through the one level of Lion King or whatever. I mean, yeah. This is like the perfect distillation of that. Like you can time travel, obviously. And I'd go into that in the book, but like the way you are supposed to play this game is literally one day at a time and you run out of things to do and you need to turn it off and go do something else with your life and absorb it really, really patiently. And the last chapter of this game mostly just compares and contrasts this game with New Horizons. And New Horizons is just the opposite of a lot of what this is. You know, it's an endless checklist of things to do, you know, to keep you engaged, to keep you playing, which makes it a lot more like basically all the other games out there. I don't mean that in a super negative way. I just mean it's kind of become a completely different series. And so I just have... I think I knew this was like my favorite game, but just my appreciation for it and how weird it is and how interesting it is really, really deepened through digging into that so much.
Yeah, yeah. King Blunker says, is there any fun stories that you have about the secrets, like the rare fish, golden tools, money rocks? Yeah, what the hell is up with the money rock? Is that a Japanese folklore thing?
Oh, about that one.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, there's, I think, like, half a chapter in this that talks a lot about, like, the rumors and stuff, especially in Animal Crossing,
right.
And about how, you know, you can catch a whale or you can hit Tom Nook's shop five times with a shovel and then you can go in when it's closed. And Ben, have you ever heard of Brutus? You ever heard of the evil purple bulldog
No.
that terrorized your village?
No, this
was like a
great
big rumor back in the day. It's not true, but it was a big thing that spread, was that there was this purple bulldog with red eyes and he would like crash your game if you ran into him, and just, you know, just it was this era where you could just make stuff up like that.
Right.
The whale isn't real, but it's also not real. sometimes when you are on the boat with Cap'n heading to the island, if you got that Game Boy Advance connected, there's a very rare chance you can see a fish shadow that's bigger than the boat, that's like huge. It's not catchable in that you can't fish off of the boat. It's essentially a cutscene.
Right.
But there have been some people who have like hacked the game and basically like forced that to spawn and forced fishing. It just brings up the first fish in the alphabet.
Okay.
So it's just like an overflow error or whatever, but like you can catch it if you do a whole lot of hacky stuff and, you know, mod the game, hack the game to get there. And then the getting into Tom Nook's shop after it's closed by hitting it with a shovel, that's in this one. That's an E+. It's not in our version of the
weird.
Game, but that is actually true in this one. So that's a weird case of, like, it's a rumor that's, like, true in a different version of the game, but it's not, you know, you can't do it anyway in the GameCube one.
That is wild that actually holds true instead of just, you know, playground nonsense. Like, wow.
Yeah. A lot of things are just kid nonsense. Just, right. You know, the Lara Croft nude cheats and all that, just like, it's just total nonsense. But no, that one's real, just wrong game.
Sweet. Kelsey Lewin, good job reading.
Thanks.
If people want to learn even more about Animal Crossing and support your authorial debut, where should they go? What should they do?
Yeah, so we're selling copies on the Pink Gorilla website. That's the store I co-own. It's pinkgorillagames.com. You can purchase a signed or not signed copy there. You won't hurt my feelings. You'll save my hand, in fact.
Okay.
also the publisher, Boss Fight Books, they make a lot of really... These are all by different authors, and there's a bunch of other books out there just about different games. There's, you know, like Metal Gear Solid and Katamari and World of Warcraft and just like all kinds of
the NES Bible games is one of my favorite.
Bible Adventures is one of the best ones for sure. My editor wrote that one, actually.
That's right.
Yeah, some really good ones. I have not come close to reading all of them, but there's probably one for you. I would say even if you are not interested in Animal Crossing, if you just like me nerding out about history and stuff, like there's a lot of weird stuff in here, you might still enjoy it. You might at least understand why people care about Animal Crossing. So yeah, you can get it at pinkgorillagames.com. Oh, nice.
Here's my
collection.
Wait, what's
the... Oh, you have NBA Jam.
NBA Jam, Shadow of the Colossus, and Bible Adventures, yeah.
Nice, yeah. Yeah, and then bossfightbooks.com has physical copies and also ebooks as well. I'm not selling any of the ebooks myself, so if you want those, you'll have to get them there.
Sweet.
And yeah.
Yeah, or you can follow MinMax Show on Instagram and submit a comment in the post about Kelsey and her book, and we're going to randomly choose 5 winners, and Kelsey's going to ship out a signed copy. All right, that's it. You can vote for more episodes of the hit new show on MinMax Reading by supporting MinMax on Patreon at the $10 tier, the Backstage Pass tier. We'd appreciate that support, but otherwise, we'll be back next week with some new show. Thanks, oh, how do you say goodbye in Animal Crossing? Is there something Rossetti says or something?
No, I don't think so.
There's no iconic goodbye in the series? There's got to be something.
Yeah.
The probably owl.
Is. Oh, I never talked, but just for Twitch chat, you can
what is this?
Take this out of the normal show if you don't
know.
No, care.
It needs to be.
But I did post on Instagram that I'd talk about this. This is an expired energy drink from 2019. I drank one of these every day of my life in college. This is Watermelon Mountain Dew Kickstart Hydrating Boost. It's the greatest energy drink in the world. They expired a long time ago. They discontinued a long time ago. I've been saving 2 of them. For when my book was physically in my hands and when I sold my first copy. I have 2 of them to drink now.
Whoa!
So, expired to drink.
Come on, everybody, give it up! Kelsey wrote a book! Give it up! Twitch chat! They're going nuts!
Pretty flat.
No, don't
but
say
it
that.
It doesn't taste dangerous.
It tastes like victory. Oh, man, chat's lighting up. Congratulations. Everyone wants you to chug it, but you need to, this is like fine wine. You can't chug that. You gotta savor it.
Savor this.
Yeah. All right. Thanks so much, Kelsey. Thanks so much, everybody. Animal Crossing to you.